This one's called Around the Corner. Once, as a child, I almost saw a man kill himself. The boys up on the wall looked down at him as he, weeping, put his head on the tracks. I stood back, watching them as they watched him. Or that's how I remember it. But I also remember his face, so I'm not sure I believe my memory. The boys were hollering with joy, as I recall, but that seems improbable to me now. What I know about people, even cruel children, is that amusement there, in that context, it isn't likely. I remember that they averted their eyes at the last second as the train passed, so none of them saw him die either. But yeah, we were all there. Decades later, lying in bed with my girlfriend, I tell her the story and she says, "Jesus." And I say, "But do you really believe they laughed?" "I do," she says, "but I guess I already know that." Later still, I drive over a goose, which walked onto the freeway and just stared at me. I slammed on my brakes, honked at it, but it just stood staring, and I couldn't stop. Not there, so I drove slowly over it, my back tire lifting a little. In the rear view, I tell my girlfriend on the phone minutes later, "It wasn't dead yet. I saw one of its wings extend up toward the sky." "Oh, don't tell me that," she implores. "I don't want to know." "But I didn't kill it," I say, pulling over onto the shoulder, putting my hazards on. "Someone behind me, please," she says. But I'm not done. I need to tell her about the wing pointing upwards, like it wanted to tell me something. I needed her to hear that, yes, maybe we're all dying, but it's not my fault. Someone's down there. And then they say be funny, so I'm not going to do that. It's not going to happen. This is a story in progress. It's short, very short. I don't have a title for it yet. And yeah, it's a little bit longer than the last one, I guess. But it's about a psychotherapist's wife. I don't know. On Thursday afternoons, the psychotherapist's wife gathers the gauze, the antibiotic ointment. In the evening, after his weekly sessions with the Minotaur, she bandages her husband's arms. The gorings happen every time these days. Ignoring his pledge to confidentiality, her husband, the psychotherapist, tells her everything. Says the Minotaur feels like he is always standing in line at Starbucks, airport security, and the pharmacy where he picks up his pills for blood pressure and anxiety. "It's all one disease," he says, while she dabs his wounds with peroxide. She nods and tells him to hold still. The psychotherapist's wife is exhausted too, is also always standing in line. Sometimes she glimpses the Minotaur there, waiting to pay for groceries. She has violated him by listening to his secrets, she thinks. His wet nose, the flared nostrils, and dark eyes like giant damp olives. They look so tender, scanning the tabloids. He deserves better. They all deserve better, probably. Last week, she saw the Minotaur galloping through a Little League game, head down, chasing shrieking children, snorting and growling. He seemed so delighted, his gym shorts sagging low, exposing his bright red boxer briefs, like he didn't care, like it wasn't just his head that ran bull, like it wasn't just his body, aging and soft, that fell human. That night, her husband came home early, sighing loudly in every room as he moved through the house, turning on the lights everywhere. She kissed his bandaged shoulder, told him to make his own goddamn dinner. He laughed like she was being funny. Somewhere, he heard that laughter is important, it's part of communication, so he laughs as much as possible. But it means nothing, because it's a decision. He called pizza, poured a great deal of bourbon into a glass, and they watched some PBS. Later, when he came to bed, even though he was too anxious to sleep, he told her about the difference between a labyrinth and a maze. In a maze, he said, you make choices. You can get lost in a maze. There are different pathways, and most of them are mistakes, most of them dead end. You can't get lost in a labyrinth, not really. It just winds along, turning once in a while. It's like security at the airport. Then he started snoring, so she got up, went through the living room, and brought herself off in the darkness, thinking of no one in particular. Instead, she imagined herself in a heavy downpour, a summer monsoon, and she was wearing nothing but a white cotton dress, and people who she feared, people she admired, were looking at her. They stood quietly on the porch, watching her approach from across the field. The fabric was clinging to her. There was no way to stop it. Everything was slow, like the dream was stuck there at the moment of maximum exposure. When she came, her mind lurched, as she knew it would, to the memory of that minotaur running around in the field, his shorts sagging, and she pushed three fingers into herself so it hurt. Afterward, it took her a long time to catch her breath. The minotaur thinks of himself as neither human nor bull. Fine, right, welcome to being alive. That's what she'd tell him. There is no condition except that condition. She brought a psychotherapist into her bed and vowed to sleep beside him forever. And all she's figured out is that he snores after whiskey. The only thing he's taught her is that maze or labyrinth, you're walking down aisles, and it doesn't stop until it does.